Welcome to the Stahl's Heat Press for Profit podcast, a show designed for people who are trying to make it in their heat print hustle. I'm your host, Josh Ellsworth, and we're excited to welcome Brenda Garcia from One Urban Family and Magical Memories Boutique. We're excited to learn more about Brenda's businesses, her success, and challenges on today's show. Brenda, welcome to the podcast. Can you spend a minute or two telling our listeners a little bit about your business and yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm so excited to meet you and so very excited to be able to share the real life experience of a person in a company that is trying to set itself apart from all of the other companies in this business. And so we're out in Arizona, and I am the owner of One Urban Family Custom Apparel, and that is our wholesale division. We also own a smaller sister division called Magical Memories Boutique. And if I'm really looking at it from kind of outside point of view, I can tell you that our business started off as a one-off type shop, and that is really the work of Magical Memories Boutique. And we evolved when we increased our capabilities to One Urban Family Custom Apparel, and that is our wholesale branded apparel division. So that's how we ended up with the two entities.
Excellent. Awesome. So before we get too deep, I'd like to give our listeners a quick overview of the show in case this is your first episode listening in. Format is simple. We host casual conversations with apparel decorators like Brenda in hopes that we might have an impact on their business and yours. That's the simple format that it is. And for the next 30 minutes or so, you'll get to listen in as I dive into Brenda's business, find out what's working well for them, and find out really what challenges they're having and see if we can offer some advice to help them continue to grow. So Brenda, one of the first questions I have is, you have two separate divisions, which I think is really smart. Can you walk through the evolution and when you decided to move from the one-off business and go a little bit into the wholesale side of things? How did that happen?
Okay, and so that's an excellent question, and that is a big part of our business story. One of the things that I find in running this business is that you have to be open to pivoting and transitioning to kind of go along with the trends in the market and the opportunity. When my business partner, who is also my husband, and I actually started in this business, it was his business, and it was not something that I was all that passionate about. He's an incredible graphic designer, and he's super gifted in production and is totally capable of producing anything. And for the longest time, I just kind of sat there and thought, well, this is an interesting idea, like a lot of us do. We started off doing one-off custom shirts, and that was only because my husband could not find his favorite band shirts, and he just wasn't able to find the things that he wanted online. And this was 11 years ago, before the market was saturated, before all of these folks had access to like the hobby cutters, and before it was a common thing to have heat presses in someone's, you know, home or someone's basement or in their office, right? People just didn't have that, and he really just started off making shirts for himself. And he started wearing them to work. And one day, a guy from his job just say, hey, you know, I really like the shirts that you're wearing. Where are you getting these from? And at first, this is so funny. I think he's probably going to kill me if I say this, but he actually told the guy that he bought it from someone else. And the reason why he did that was because he said he didn't really know what he was doing. And he just wanted to kind of get away from the responsibility of owning that particular shirt. But finally, the man came again and said, well, who's doing your shirts? And my husband said, okay, the jig is up. I'm actually making the shirts. And that's actually how we ended up with our first large order. The gentleman said, hey, I play for a softball team. Would you care to make our shirts for us? And that was our very first like large order and our very first actual customer. And so we did that for a while, and word of mouth just kind of spread. Folks started seeing the gentleman who played for the softball league at work. They started seeing his shirt. So that's really, really cool. Like, where'd you get your shirt? And they all pointed back to my husband, and that's kind of how it got started. What we realized after a while was that we had two types of customers. We were doing these larger orders over some time, and that took up a little bit of time to build up, so it wasn't instant. And then we had these smaller orders, so like, for example, a custom birthday onesie, you know, cause that's a really big opportunity. They're doing children's apparel and like the fun little keepsake type things, and we would do that. But then we had like an entire soccer team. And then one day I was sitting there thinking, you know, this soccer team's order cannot be put on our boutique page because it doesn't seem to align with the one-off boutique model. It just doesn't seem right. And I also probably can't put that baby bodysuit when I'm sending it over to, let's say, like a corporate account. And that's actually how we ended up with the two divisions. It just kind of started forking naturally. That's how we ended up with that.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. So creating a environment where that customer only sees products that may be relevant to them. So that's as good a reason as any to kind of split and offer two divisions. And I'm sure it helps you to stay a little more focused around the needs and the opportunities of each business. So are they about equal in size, or is there a certain one you put a little more energy into because it's growing faster, or what does that look like?
So really, they are kind of equal in size, and I'll give you an example. We were included in a giveaway just last week for the boutique side of the business, and we ended up increasing our following by 600 or 700 followers like in a week, and that kind of grew that end of it pretty quickly in a short amount of time. But where my main focus and all of my attention really and energy is going now that the boutique is kind of consistent in sales and we're able to do those pretty easily, I'm focusing on the wholesale division itself. So they're both consistent, and we've been working to create consistent streams of revenue for a while. But One Urban Family Custom Apparel, the wholesale division, is really taking on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. And just because I'm curious, Brenda, your background, did you start in the business? It sounded like you came in a little bit after your husband was doing the shirts for himself. When did you start in the business, and what's your primary responsibility?
Okay. So yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm almost like embarrassed to tell the story about how I ended up in this business to begin with. But I've got to be really clear when I tell you that I would cringe when people would refer to me as their t-shirt lady. And it's like, it was the worst. I would see my name being tagged in a Facebook post, like on social media, saying, "You really need to get a hold of my t-shirt lady, Brenda." And I just wanted to die because I didn't want to be known as the t-shirt lady, because I really wasn't the one doing all the graphic work, and I really wasn't doing all the hands-on stuff. And frankly, for a while there, I didn't even know how to press a shirt myself. And so I was just kind of like shadowing my husband. And so he started this about 11 years ago. And right after, well, this also goes back, but my dad passed away about two and a half years ago. And right before he passed, I had a conversation with him. And I said, "Hey, Dad, I'm not really sure what to do with my career, with my business. I mean, should I go back into teaching? Because that's my formal background. Should I go back into education?" And he said, no, you should join your husband in the business and grow it big is what you should do. And I thought, but Dad, I don't, you know, and I told him, I don't want to be a t-shirt lady. And he said, you're not going to be a t-shirt lady. You're going to use the brains that you used when you were teaching, but you're going to apply it to something different, and you're going to become a business owner. And that was about 2.5 years ago. And after he passed, I spent 30 days grieving, but also writing out a business plan. And 30 days after my dad died, I officially became the sales and marketing director for a t-shirt company.
Well, that's a great story, how you were able to kind of seek advice, find your way, and able to get good sound advice and really move through that grieving process and turn into an outcome that's positive and something you can be proud of. So sales and marketing, that's your knack now. You've been doing it for about 2.5 years in the business?
Yes. Yes, and you know what? He was right. I am really good at it.
Good, good. No, it's interesting, especially because this will be, I don't even know what episode I'm on. I've recorded so many of these in the backlog, but I spoke with another business owner that came from a teaching background, interesting enough, in my last conversation. She tended to gravitate to the art side of the business as well, to the art side of the business, and you're gravitating to the sales and marketing. So I think there's not a one-size-fits-all. It's, you know, find what you're good at, latch onto it, invest yourself into it, and with the right energy and the right passion towards it, I think people can be good at a lot of the different things.
Oh, I you know, I agree. If someone would have told me that my second career would be more fulfilling than my first, you know, my first career, I would have laughed and said, you've got to be kidding me. But this gives me the opportunity to share. It gives me the opportunity to teach. I feel like I'm utilizing my teaching skills every single time I'm describing the differences between fabric to a customer. And even when I'm selling myself, this is the reason why you should buy from us. And this is, you know, this is the reason why this material is superior to this material and so forth and so on. So I find myself doing lots and lots of teaching under the guise of running a t-shirt company. So this has been super, super fulfilling for me.
Great, great. So we've gotten some great feedback and background on your business. I'd like to talk through a little bit more of what a typical customer looks like for you, what types of groups you're selling to. I heard a softball team was one of the first jobs, and then mm-hmm. some custom band shirts. Mm-hmm. What does a typical customer look like now? Who are you targeting?
Okay, so I can give you, you know, two really brief profiles. And so one of my Magical Memories Boutique customers, or my Magical Memories Boutique customer, comes to me typically for us to create travel gear and travel merch. Magical Memories Boutique was actually born out of a strategic partnership between myself and a person that I met online who is a very successful travel agent here in Arizona. I saw her Facebook page, saw her website, was really impressed. She was booking all of these Disney vacations. And by the way, over the course of our relationship, I mean, her business just grew. And at one point she said, hey, you know, I love these shirts that you're making for me. Do you think you would want to create for my customers, my guests? Why don't I just start referring my guests to you? So a lot of our Magical Memories Boutique customers are folks who are traveling and who are trying to commemorate and create keepsakes for their vacation. That's a typical Magical Memories Boutique customer.
That's excellent. Very specific, which is yeah. phenomenal. And the fact that you were able to go out and chase down that partnership and develop it. Now, are you exclusive through that travel agent, or have you went out to other similar travel agents and tried to network and place the gear there?
And so we are able to. I am definitely loyal to this particular agent because she's really helped us with lots of opportunities. I'm not exclusive in the sense that I'm not open to other partnerships. We do have other partnerships, but I also tend to cross promote. So she'll promote my shop. And she was actually the person who approached me and said, you have excellent quality products. Why aren't you marketing these items? And so she really encouraged me. And no, I'm not exclusive, but this has been one of my stronger strategic partnerships. And I think it's really important that folks do step out and try to make connections and try to network. You never know what benefits you'll reap from connecting with other people.
Yeah, definitely. And you said you had two customer examples. That was one typical customer on that side of the business. Do you have another specific customer that's a typical ideal customer for you?
So absolutely. What I find with our typical One Urban Family custom apparel is that they're really focused on branding. And this is where we switch. This is where we take advantage of our graphic and design capabilities. So I would say that the products and the customers that are utilizing our services are going to be more artistically geared and more branding aware and more branding branding geared as well. So one example of a regular client is actually an up-and-coming author who requires very specific merchandise for her merch tables. So we are her merchandise table supplier. So that is an example of one of our typical customers.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So you're leveraging the capability you have in the business with your husband's skill set and background into
Absolutely.
A way that really creates a competitive advantage out there in the market. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so here's the interesting thing. And I think that's what really created that division. We realized that we were working really strongly with the graphic part and the artistic part with the larger accounts, and really we're doing keepsakes for like the boutique part. And we thought, well, you know, the boutique customers are just interested in having something that they can look at in photos, right? But our wholesale division customers were coming at us and saying, I need this particular item to feel this way. I need this particular item to say this when someone sees it. I need it to look this certain way. I'm trying to give off this vibe, in the words of one of my customers. And it also needs to be higher end. For a lot of our wholesale customers, these items need to be higher end. So I've got to spend a lot of time on my side choosing fabrics, comparing brands. I mean, it doesn't just stop at, well, we need a t-shirt. Well, this time it needs to be a very specific garment and a very specific printing material. I have one, and this isn't necessarily to flatter anyone, but I have one client who will only allow us to use Premium Plus on her item.
I always say it just feels better, so I'll take that.
Exactly. It does feel better. And she will say, hey, you're using Premium Plus, right? Well, of course we're using Premium Plus. What else would we use?
Yeah, and I know we probably have some listeners that aren't familiar with Premium Plus specifically as a brand. And so I want to use this opportunity to talk just about how you're actually manufacturing goods, what technology sets you're using to decorate the items for both sides of the business.
Okay, so absolutely. One of the things that we started off in heat press, and that was more than a decade ago when we really had access to lower level, lower capability type machinery. And early on, we were dealing with like the hobby things because we really were not familiar with the other brands. We eventually grew from like the hobby type machinery to the professional industrial stuff. Aside from heat vinyl, we also do screen printing, and when it's necessary, we also do screen print transfers. We have just recently contracted to do embroidery, but for our boutique, we typically use Premium Plus, which has been the most reliable product that we have used doing our heat press products. It's a phenomenal product. What I love about Premium Plus is how versatile it is. I really like the color selection that is available to us through Stahls for Premium Plus. It's a win-win. Like, we've never had an issue with Premium Plus. And let's just say that we've had clients ask us if we could please correct someone else's heat press work. And of course, they weren't using Premium Plus.
Yeah. And what type of vinyl cutter do you have?
We have a Roland.
Okay, great. So did you start with a hobbyist cutter? I'm just curious.
We did, actually. In fact, this is so funny. So that very first larger softball league order was done on a 6-inch Cricut.
It's phenomenal. Honestly, the more decorators I talk to, it's not an uncommon story to start with hobbyist equipment and then evolve. But I see some folks that'll actually have a tough time moving out of a Cricut or a Silhouette because in some cases they're a little bit locked in on artwork. So the answer is they just add more Crickets. But can you just kind of walk through some of the benefits that you experienced with going from a hobbyist level vinyl cutter to more of a professional grade with a 24-inch Roland, I'm assuming?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the immediate benefits right away is the quality. There's just really no comparison between hobbyist equipment and, let's say, store-bought, like heat press vinyl. I'm talking about like the stuff that you would get at Michael's or Joann or Hobby Lobby. There's no comparing that type of hobbyist vinyl to, say, for example, Premium Plus. The difference is just day and night. One is going to stay on for 5 years, 10 years, like we've experienced having garments that have washed, I don't know, been washed a couple hundred times and still look brand new. I mean, you can't do that with store-bought heat press, you know, heat vinyl. You can't do that. And so I know that the big box stores have made it possible for almost anyone to become a quote unquote shirt maker. But time and time again, our clients have come back and said, I don't know what you use, but we're willing to pay more because your stuff doesn't peel. Your stuff looks clean. And I say the same thing. It's because of the equipment. It's because of our professional cutter. The truth is that you get what you pay for. And that's actually given us a marketing advantage. Folks know when they come to our shop that they're getting a professional quality, professionally designed, professionally made product. And that's actually given us a marketing advantage. So our investment in higher end professional machines has paid off in dividends. Our customers trust us. And that's what continues driving business.
Great. So I think that's a good pickup for our listeners, is there is a certain risk to getting started with inferior equipment. The advice I always give is if you have a limited budget, it's always better to go less expensive hobbyist on the vinyl cutter versus the heat press, because the heat press is where all the risk in the process is. If the heat press doesn't work correctly, the product's going to not last very long, and you're going to be out of business before you really have a chance to grow the business and scale. So use your money wisely, invest in quality heat press equipment, and you can grow and ultimately maybe quit your job and be a full-time business, as we've seen here. So Brenda, when we were talking a little bit before and you submitted some of your feedback when you applied to be on the podcast, I know you had some interesting topics for discussion. One that caught my attention was you stated it as the myth of market saturation. Can you talk a little bit about what that means to you and why you're passionate about that?
Absolutely. And I think this topic in my head sort of came about because of the number of times I would read on like Facebook and different forums, like industry forums, where people were talking about having to lower their prices because at one time they were the only t-shirt printer in town. And after the advent of things like YouTube and like an increasing presence on Facebook, and then of course the big box stores creating lower level hobbyist type products, I think I said this earlier, it kind of gave people the idea that anybody really could just go to, you know, Hobby Lobby, pick up a cutter and some store-bought vinyl, and you know, boom, all of a sudden, you know, instant business. And whereas like Ruben and I were 11 years ago, we were probably the only folks in our area who were creating t-shirts and selling t-shirts as a business. And over the years, we noticed that there was an increase in, you know, quote unquote, competition, or colleagues, if you want to look at it that way. We had an increase in colleagues. And so I noticed that folks were beginning to compete in terms of like pricing. You know, one guy was selling a shirt for $12 and lost the customer because another guy over here was selling a shirt for $10. And people will say, well, you know, it's not a good business to get into because the market is saturated. And yes, it is. It's saturated by hobby crafters and novices and folks who are not using cutting edge technology and material. So if you want to talk about market saturation, absolutely. We have got a huge increase in like hobby crafters, but there are also huge opportunities. So the market is not saturated, for example, when it comes to government procurement. And that's an avenue that your larger wholesale t-shirt suppliers can pursue. So yes, we're still doing our little smaller crafting projects and our smaller one-off items, but there are so many avenues because the truth is the market is saturated by hobbyists. And that means that there are way more opportunities for folks who are experienced, folks who are good at teaching skills, folks who are willing to help folks who are just starting in the business. And that opens up opportunities and revenue in the forms of like coaching opportunities, training opportunities. So, I mean, yeah, we've got lots of folks who are becoming quote unquote t-shirt printers, but there are so many other ways to generate profit in this market. And so anyway, I just think it's a really exciting time for folks who are professional, folks who use great, you know, high quality equipment, because they're going to stand apart. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. No, I think the saying that I think of is a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yes.
And so you start to think of the awareness for custom apparel that's being generated by the hobbyist or crafter. It's custom apparel is inside of more communities, whether that's physically, you know, locally with people shopping from friends, or whether that is through social media on Facebook, whatever it may mm-hmm. be. And so there is this increased demand that's being generated for custom apparel. And then I think what I've been hearing throughout the episode is you're operating on a different playing field.
Yes.
And so just making sure you can communicate to the customer that perhaps has had a poor experience, or maybe a good experience, but a less than professional finished result, or not quite the level of pro grade brand result that you're delivering. It just creates opportunity to be able to differentiate and capture some of this demand that's being built.
Absolutely. A case in point, I had mentioned that we did start off with the 6-inch Cricut 11 years ago. But I'm going to tell you that just recently, we were one of a very small group of companies that were awarded a contract with the largest public school system in our state. And what that means to me is that we, you know, our company is up-leveled. We're providing something to where we're able to print for government entities. And it started with a 6-inch Cricut, but will we be printing for the government on a 6-inch Cricut? Absolutely not. Another opportunity.
That's perfect. So that was a job you recently landed?
We just landed it a week and a half ago.
Wow. Good things are happening. Awesome.
Excellent things.
Yeah, that's great news. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how long did that sales cycle take? I'm just curious.
How long did it take to acquire that particular contract?
Yeah.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Wow.
2 weeks.
That's, that's phenomenal. So I know that our listeners are definitely going to be curious about how
right.
you were able to deliver that deal in 2 weeks and what that process looked like. So can you give us kind of the high level of how that deal came about?
Sure. It's really funny because I never thought I would be the person sharing this type of information with other business owners, seeing as I was the person who didn't want to be the t-shirt lady a few years ago, right? So we had been trying to get into, so to speak, we've been trying to crack the code surrounding this particular school district for years and years and years. And then I remember this one specific incident years ago when I was standing behind someone and I was cashing my little check from the same district. Because see, now we are selling to the same district that I used to work for as an employee, which is interesting. So there's a woman in front of me, and I always remember that I kind of looked over her shoulder and something caught my eye. And I noticed that she had a different paycheck than I did, but it was drawn on the same bank and with the same letterhead. And that's when it dawned on me that she was getting money from her district in a different way. And I remember thinking that just a few weeks ago, I was sitting in front of my computer making a list of all of the corporate accounts that I wanted to acquire in 2020. And all I did was go to my computer and enter MPS vendor. And I did that. And so what happened was, I mean, this is just fortunate. fortunate, I happened to land on a page that told me that the new bidding cycle was going to end in a few days. Now, mind you, this contract only opens up once every 5 years. How I knew to be on that particular page is, it baffles me to this day. So I got the phone number, found out that they had a buying team, that our particular industry was going to be assigned to this particular buyer, and it said, if you have any questions, contact this person. Josh, I really didn't know what I was doing when I called, but I did. And she said, I do not know the buyer, do not know, Brenda, how it is that you heard about this, but only people who have been printing with us for a while would know that this contract is just about to end and we're about to start the bidding process for new contract awards. So I said, well, what do I do? And she said, I'll give you the paperwork. The paperwork is called an RFP, which is a request for a proposal. And it's basically where you throw your hat in the ring to work for this particular entity. It was 40 pages. I did not know how to fill up an RFP, but luckily I had been connecting with the Arizona Small Business Administration, and I found that there was an agent that was close to us that was actually a specialist in RFPs. And so we were able to contract with the counselor at the Arizona Small Business Administration, and she helped me review my paperwork, and we submitted it. I mean, it was such a nerve-wracking ordeal, and we had to wait. The buyer called me and said, hey, it looks like we're about to end this early. You should know a week earlier than you thought you would whether or not you would get this award. And I went onto the website looking for our name and kept scrolling, totally disappointed. Saw that there was one last page, you know, because I really wanted to make sure that we were dead in the water, because I was, you know, making sure we were not going to go anywhere. And sure enough, we were there. There was our company name. And yeah, we were approved for this contract award with the largest school district in our state. And it just, I don't know. I'm excited about it because I know that if we're here, anybody is able to get where we are. And the next steps for our company is we're actually going to be contracting with the Department of Defense. So it's really exciting. Yeah. And it took me about 2 weeks from start to finish to get that contract.
Congratulations again. I think that's great. And I don't think it's luck at all. To me, it's you were out searching. You found an opportunity. So it was a little bit of timing. But, you know, it's that, you know, you figured it out. It's the preparation. So some tips that our listeners should take from that is you learned what an RFP is. You learned that school districts and really nearly any government agency has a certain buying season in bidding cycle where they have to get multiple proposals that they submit. So learning that process or figuring out when that timing happens is the best time to get in the door at these types of businesses. And then also, you know, connecting to your local small business administration and leveraging support from other folks, networking, partnering, leveraging some of the resources that are in place to help you as a small business owner. So you can navigate some of these things that can be really complex. But I think they're, in a way, it's kind of good that it's complex because it does provide some insulation from everybody being able to do it. And so the ones that put in the work and fill out the paperwork have a better shot at it. So that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that folks don't realize, and something that our counselors over at the SBA said to us over and over again, we don't know how you found us. We just don't have that many requests for counseling. We just don't see a lot of people. We've got all this money and we're losing our funding year after year because folks simply aren't making use of our services. And I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. How come these folks aren't utilizing your free government provided, government sponsored, know what they're talking about type of services? And so we've got a counselor through the Arizona Small Business Administration, and we're also working with a counselor in another department that is contracted with the Department of Defense. And her only job is to get us into the government procurement marketplace. And her services are zero out of pocket cost for us. And you're right, it definitely insulates us. And it definitely allows for them to vet their vendors. But a few years ago, Josh, I got to tell you, I never thought we would be working to print for the Department of Defense.
That's great news. So for those listening that are interested in connecting with the Small Business Administration, you can visit sba.gov, G-O-V, and see all of the different resources that they provide, some of them free, and make sure you get connected in your area. Utilize the resources that are available to you. So I want to talk through, I know we've talked about a lot of successes, a lot of different topics at this point. I know there you're experiencing growth, and so you're scaling. These are all exciting things. What sort of challenges do you foresee in the future for the business, or what are some of the humps that you're trying to get over at this point?
Sure. Okay. So explosive growth. Yeah, we're definitely experiencing explosive growth, but I want to say that that comes with a price, and that price is lots and lots of overtime, lots and lots of hours, lots and lots of nights of not getting a good night's sleep because I'm up until 3 a.m. or I'm up until 4 a.m. And like the 2 weeks that we were working on that initial RFP, I spent most of the day and most of the night chained to my desk. And when you are in this state of explosive growth, you have to be mindful that if you're spending a whole lot of your time in business development, it's really easy to let sales kind of go by the wayside. And so that's definitely something that we're looking at. We've got to step back and say, okay, I have got to, you know, I've got 40 hours and 10 hours of that week are going to be business development and 30 hours are going to be sales, marketing, customer service, so forth and so on. Because it's really easy for you to look at these big gains and these big contracts and just keep your eye on the prize and kind of have a narrow, you know, one way vision because you're looking at this one particular opportunity, and it's easy to kind of look at sales and say, you know, that can take a backseat for right now. And so, yeah, that's definitely the challenge, figuring out how to manage my time so where I'm still moving towards our overall big picture goals, but I'm also still dealing with the day to day.
Yeah. And so for the listener that may not be able to draw the distinction, what I'm hearing is you're categorizing business development as future markets, strategies, and planning, and sales as basically orders coming through the door today or in the short order.
Absolutely. And there's a difference, because there is a difference between there was a mentor who told me this, and I think it's really valuable. He said, you know, Brenda, there's a difference between busyness and business.
Yeah, that's
so. Yeah.
That's cool to keep in mind. It's an interesting way to put it, a little play on words, but it sticks, right? Something you'll remember, and really challenges your thinking to make sure you're doing the long term planning. Most struggle with the long term planning and spend a lot of the time on the today. So we always say getting outside of the business to work on the business. We've heard that from some of our guests in other podcasts that published earlier. But there's also the risk of focusing too much on the long term when you need sales and you need cash flow to be able to fulfill and reach those long term objectives.
Yeah, you said it better than I could. Truly, you nailed it. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, good. So while you have me, I know that you know, we spent some time talking before the show, and if you've watched some of the videos throughout the years, are there any questions that you have for me that I can answer live on air here?
Okay, so I know that you haven't always been in your current position. How in the world, this is something that I've always wondered, how in the world did you gain the level of expertise that you have? And how in the world did you end up at the top of stalls? Have you always been in this industry? And if you haven't, what's your background? That's something I would love to know.
Yeah, so self-taught is the best way I can say. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. I had, so just a quick background. I started when I was a teenager helping my grandfather with maintenance on the stall's properties in Pennsylvania. So cutting the grass, scrubbing the floors, doing all that kind of fun stuff. And, my grandfather and my grandmother, did that for many years, had their own company and were contracted to do the work. And my father also worked in managing some of the facilities. So I worked on the maintenance side, and then I graduated high school and I wanted to play basketball. And so I said, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to play basketball. So I went to a small local school to play basketball. We absolutely stunk, and I didn't experience any success there. And I'm like, you know, I'm not sure about this school thing if it's for me. At the time, I was still working the maintenance job as a part-time. And funny enough, so I'll give you the unedited version, I guess. I saw a girl inside. And I'm like,
that's the real answer.
Yeah, that's the real answer. And I'm like, I think I want a job in sales, but it was really because I wanted to work in that department beside that girl because I was going to date that girl. Well, yes. The girl and I didn't get along very well at first. Well, now she's my wife. So I ended up getting that sale finally, right?
you certainly landed the contract.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the big term picture and the thing that matters. But I guess from a career perspective, I took the sales job. I couldn't do the college thing and the sales job all at the same time. So I chose to focus on sales. Uh-huh. And then really it was, I guess, just thinking and knowing that I'm all in on whatever I do and being passionate about it. So I would think about how to sell more, how to win, how to lead the team each night and put in the extra hours to do things like in 2006, bring in my home video camera, stay after hours because I wanted to show people how to use a professional cutter back in those days and get the first video on YouTube doing so. Wow. And I'd say that I read a book. It was called, hopefully I get the name right, The Brand U50. And my dad bought it for me for a birthday. I had just dropped out of school, and I think he wanted to kind of give me some motivation. So it's an easy read. It's an interesting read. But basically, it challenged you to brand yourself, to create some demand, not only for the company you work for, but for you personally. And so that really is what motivated me to learn about blogging and launch my own blog back in those days, as well as be on videos and trying to get people calling, asking for me so I could grow the company sales, help more customers, and really help my sales. And then credit to our leadership team at the time, really our owner, I believe took notice of that and more. I just started to get phone calls and conversations, and as I handled those wells, more opportunities came my way. And so now it's kind of pivoted. Rather than being the person doing all the videos, trying to figure out how we can get more folks on our team engaged with doing similar things. So that's been really a fun part of the journey for me in my position today. So that's the short version, right?
Okay. So that's actually what is absolutely remarkable about the journey that I know my husband and I have watched over the last couple of years in your YouTube video and YouTube videos and then Stahls TV. You have definitely, like, you've become and are the face of Stahls. I mean, that, and I can say that. You probably can't say that for legal reasons, but I can tell, you know, I can tell you that when I think of Stahls and Stahls TV and Stahls social media, I think of Josh Ellsworth. And I think who better to ask this question than to you, Josh. Do you have any tips for branding yourself and for setting yourself apart in this market? I mean, yeah, I gave my experience, but I want to hear from a person who's actually become the face of this company and started off as a maintenance person.
Yeah. So, and I appreciate your kind words and I'll accept them humbly. And I will say, we certainly have a great team, and there's been a long, heritage and history in front of me, for doing those things. So I just had the perfect, sort of paved path to be able to step up. And, my tip is, focus on education and be authentic. So my title is sales manager, senior vice president of sales, but nobody likes to be sold to, but people love learning and people love buying when it's something that's going to make them successful that they can attach to. So I think it's really just putting out more content, doing it in a spirit of helping people achieve what they want to accomplish rather than your personal accomplishments. And if you can connect to what your customer, be very specific about who your customer is and not necessarily what they want to make, but who they want to become. I think that just helps to guide a big picture vision and sort of keep you on track and on focus so you can stay real, authentic, and really helpful to the people that you're ultimately serving in your role.
Wow. Okay. So that is a true come to Jesus moment. for sure. I'm listening to you and I'm like, I'm still blown away. I don't know how you did it, but I'm listening to your story and I'm truly, truly inspired that you decided to be authentic. You show up, especially like in the Heat Press forum, you're constantly on the forum. And I'm like, how does this guy even have time to talk to us, to share his best advice? And this is who we need to talk to. And I'm just like, wow, he really is here because he wants to help the members of this group. And I can see that. I see that in your YouTube videos. I see it on Stahl's TV. If you want good advice, you just have to talk to, you know, you've got to talk to Josh.
Yeah, well, again, I appreciate it. And I think that's another one is just being there and being responsive and being present.
Yes. Yes.
You know, there's you need to engage with people, right? It's about relationships. It's about connection. And you can't build that connection with one-way conversation, one-way communication.
Agreed.
So that's a part of it, too. And that really started many years ago in my sales job on T-shirt forums when that was still a big part of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I jumped in there and liked to answer and ask and learn those sorts of things. So good. We are coming up on the end here. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to turn it back to you for 1 second and just say for our listeners that are in the business, maybe some that are struggling to make the decision whether to jump from a side hustle to a full-time gig or those that are in a full-time gig and that are struggling to make it, what are some of the top pieces of advice that you would want to offer them as we close this episode?
Sure. Off the top of my head, I can say invest in the best possible equipment. That's the first thing. So invest in the best possible equipment for the best possible output. I know that folks aren't able to start oftentimes, and they're not able to start with the $3,000 machine or the $4,000 machine, but I would say buy the very best that you can afford, and that will, you know, the machinery will pay for itself over and over again, time and time again. You will see a return on investment with the higher quality equipment, and that's actually one way to stand apart from, you know, the hobby crafters and the folks who are saturating the market. It's actually a competitive advantage. So, you know, equipment is a really important part of it. And the second thing that you want to do is you want to constantly research opportunities and be prepared to take advantage of those opportunities. When we started the process of completing our first RFP for the largest school district in the state, I really had no idea what it was that we were doing, but I was absolutely determined to figure out how to do it. And if I really would have given in to the feeling that was taking a hold of me, the feeling was, it's never going to work out, Brenda. It's never going to work out. You're never going to get this. You really don't know what you're doing. The companies who are competing against you are too big. They're much bigger than your shop. If I would have given into the self-doubt, we wouldn't have received the award. So I think researching is important, and I think being prepared to take opportunities and taking risk, I think, is really important. So equipment, number one, and two, being game. Simply being game to the opportunity, because even if you're not awarded the contract, you would have already learned how to complete an RFP. And what if there's another opportunity where it requires an RFP? Well, you already have that experience. And so being positive is a third thing. You just really have to believe that good things happen, and why can't those good things happen for you?
Great advice. And I love hearing it from the minds and mouths of entrepreneurs on our show. That's what this show is all about. So we want to thank Brenda for being on the podcast today. I also want to give a shout out to her teammate, Ruben, who probably will listen in. We wish you all nothing but more success as you look to rapidly scale your apparel business, both sides of it. And listeners, we hope you found something on today's show that will help you, maybe even challenge you to be a little bit bolder in your business and the power of positivity. If you'd like to ask follow-up questions, just look for our show conversation thread over at the Heat Press for Profit Facebook group, where you can network and share ideas with thousands of businesses aiming to make a profit with heat printing just like you.